Good evening. You're listening to Mountain Talk here on WMMT, and we're really pleased that tonight we have a special guest, Elaine McMillian from West Virginia. And I believe, Elaine, you put a lot of time in Logan County as a young person.
Yeah. Actually, I was born in Abingdon, Virginia, though.
Ah. Well, you're covering all the bases. Yeah. You just have to come and live in Kentucky for a while then. But Elaine, not too long ago, finished a really amazing multimedia presentation called The Hollow, or The Holler, but it is spelled like hollow. And it really looks at McDowell County, West Virginia, and looks at the people there and is also done by the people there and is a multimedia presentation and counters so many of the stereotypes of what... maybe not so many people in our listening area, but people in the larger world think of Eastern Kentucky and Southwestern West Virginia and Virginia. Tell us a little bit about the project.
So the project is online at hollowdocumentary.com. It's an interactive website that allows you to explore McDowell County and the present day issues and celebration of the place through photos and soundscapes and data visualizations and community participatory content made up of 30 short films that range from everything from, you know, you're going to meet Linda McKinney today, who runs a food bank in the area, to a coal miner, to an activist, environmental activist, to restaurant owners. And it sort of just tries to give you a tour through a small town that has seen decline but still has hope for the future.
And what's your inspiration for this? How did this all come about?
Well, the story inspiration came from numbers, population numbers, and depopulation numbers. All 10 towns in McDowell County incorporated towns are losing population, have been steadily. But the actual... I realized that there was just so many stories to share and also interesting data to share to pair the qualitative with the quantitative and put it online for a global audience to understand Appalachia and small town America.
And this is really something new. I mean, there are some of us around here are filmmakers and radio producers, but this new online media form is really exciting and baffling. And how did you get into that, or why did you choose that?
Well, it just felt a bit limited by a linear form. I'd felt like I couldn't explore all the things I wanted to explore in 75 minutes or 57 minutes. And so, a lot of independent producers are just now starting to make interactive docs. They've been made mostly by institutions and like the National Film Board of Canada, the New York Times, The Guardian have made interactive projects. And we just really wanted to push the limits to bring this story that's sort of it's a story of an old world, an old story, historical story, into a new technology world, and pair those two together to create a new audience for this.
And it's really wonderful, all the historical information that you have in there, as well as the contemporary.
Yeah, so it's actually built to include 6 chapters, so you can come back and view it as you want. You can view chapter by chapter, but the first chapter really details 1940s to today and what's been happening over the years, from JFK's visit to the different things that have happened. And also, it's important to note that, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to choose this interactive form is that it allows the community to keep updating their stories. So it's really a living, breathing project. And as the community and residents update their stories, you can actually subscribe to their initiatives and their stories and actually keep updated with them and encourage them. And so we thought that was important to connect them to the outside as well.
Yeah, explain a little bit about that process. So there were a group of a couple of filmmakers, primarily yourself, and I understand the crew was all West Virginians, pretty much.
Yeah, basically the crew on the ground was West Virginians. Trisha Folks is my best friend, and she's also a journalist from West Virginia. Michelle Miller has worked in community organizing, participatory video storytelling. And so we all came down to McDowell from May to September. I was there alone most of the time shooting, but once a month we had these workshops where we would get people together, we'd advertise around the community and say, hey, free food, free drink, just come and tell us your story, come learn how to shoot video, come watch some of the things that we've already shot, and we screened things and got feedback. And so we just had this, you know, monthly meeting where we were able to meet the community and allow them to tell us what the narratives of their place were.
And what kind of response did you get? And especially, I'm interested in the community making their own media.
So, you know, we trained a very wide range of people, from kids in the 4-H camp to adults in their 60s. And so, you know, there was some excitement around the idea that there were 5 cameras now in the community, that we raised the money through Kickstarter to buy those cameras, and they're still there. There's an excitement that, you know, we could take out these cameras. And so, you know, we had around 20 people that were interested in shooting their own short films, and it was just a matter of training them and helping them to sort of figure out their story. But, you know, we like to keep it relaxed, and we allowed people to shoot what they thought needed to be told.
Great. And those stories, they're all together on the website.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Great. And you can tell which stories are shot by the community by, there's a star icon on the site that will trigger community content.
Oh, great. Well, tell us about your kind of your launch, your premiere, and we're gonna play that in a minute. On West Virginia Day?
Yeah. So we actually were supposed to launch in April or May or something, I think. And, you know, this is a very extensive website. We had 2 developers and really talented developers and designers working on this. And we pushed over our deadline a bit. And I said, well, let's just push over a little bit more to West Virginia Day. It was the 150th year of statehood. You know, West Virginians love West Virginia, and we're going to be looking for something to share on West Virginia Day. So we waited to launch until June 20th of 2013. And the site itself, HoloDocumentary.com, is not a real shareable piece. You have to spend time with it. You know, it's a piece you can't just go in and figure it out and leave. So what we did is we worked with the New York Times to cut a short piece around 6 or 7 minutes that would sort of be that more shareable piece that would lead people to the longer interactive piece. And then that following weekend, we did 2 screenings, one really big one in Welch outside, and then the next day one in Coretta at the Big Creek People in Action. So we tried to keep the initial screenings as local as possible and get feedback. And, you know, the feedback was amazing. And I think people are still really excited about it. And it brought a lot of pride back to the people that were in part of it. So that was great
to see. That's great. Well, I love the New York Times, but it seems like they often use McDowell County as the example of a community going downhill and compare it to Austin, Texas, or something like that. So this was a bit different for them.
It's very different. And, you know, just a couple weeks ago, the New York Times had an article saying that the lifespan in Iraq was the same as in McDowell County, West Virginia. And using data points to tell the story of a very diverse community is problematic. So, you know, what this video did is really put a face, not just on McDowell County, but small towns in West Virginia. And the name of the short film is West Virginia Still Home. And it's very much a piece about home and roots.
Okay, well, we're going to play it. And it is a film, so you'll hear some just natural noises as well as people talking. And then you yourself need to go to the website and see it so you can see it in all its entirety.
McDowell County was once the backbone where power was concerned. We just don't have the people here that we once had.
We're like the backyard of the nation is Southern West Virginia. Your front yard's for looks. You got your pretty flowers and your pretty bushes, and you know, that's what you want people to see. You don't want them to see your backyard, because that's where your dog house and your hoe and your shovel and all that. But that's because back there is where the work gets done. Aaron Cole forged the steel that built the nation.
I don't believe that it'll ever be like it was when I was a kid. I really don't believe that.
I couldn't wait to get out of here. I hated this place. Got married when I was 17, hit the road. And I was gone a lot of years. And when you come back, you see all those things you took for granted. These roots hold these trees and these mountains. And somehow those roots get embedded in our souls. And we are very connected to these mountains. And it doesn't matter if they never come back. This will always be home, and they will always, always have those roots in them.
right. Well, that was just an introductory piece to the full hollow presentation called West Virginia Still Home. And really lovely, and it's well worth finding that on the internet and seeing it, because the people are beautiful to see and the community as well as to hear what they have to say. And I was wondering, Elaine, what your expectations were in going to MacDill. I mean, you do start the on the internet, it starts with towns that are dying, and that's the way that MacDill County is often portrayed. And is that kind of how you headed there?
Well, when we were doing user testing, we did it outside of West Virginia, and people were very confused about, what is this place? Where is this place? Why is it in this situation? What's going on there? And so we realized that, you know, definitely one of my goals was to say that, you know, this is a problem across the nation, that these small towns, we're not paying attention to what's happening in these small towns. And so we did want it to bring it to national attention, which is why we sort of have that thesis statement up front, which is that one in three counties are dying. And it was interesting because, you know, I had looked up all the national data on rural depopulation, but right before we launched and we were trying to figure out the wording for how to open it, the census actually came out with that statistic that one in three rural counties were dying. And so it proved that it was something very timely. And, you know, it is a negative thing to start to open it up and say, this is a dying place and you're going to learn about the story of it. And, you know, someone was critiquing it not long ago and said that you get the perception this is going might be a negative experience, but you quickly learn that it's not, and it's about pride and it's about place. And it's very much an uplifting piece, even though it does, you know, communicate many struggles. You can't wear rose-colored glasses and look at these places. You really have to be realistic if you want to help them, and if you want to, you know, accurately tell that story. So,
well, good. And tell us a little bit about the variety of people that you ended up interviewing and what kinds of things they were doing.
Yeah, I mean, the process of meeting people was one in where I first met a high school student named Josh Clevenger, who was the mascot at the high school, very energetic, very passionate, sort of reminded me of myself, just like a crazy making home movie types of guy. So I met him, and, you know, he was a really great person to connect me to other people. I met Alan, who's a bluegrass musician and photographer. I met Jean Batlow, who runs the Coal Camp Creations, where she actually makes figurines out of coal dust. I met Linda McKinney and Bob McKinney, who run the food bank and a community garden. I met Shauna Stephanie Pinwarden, who run a really fantastic business in North Fork that caters to the ATV riders coming in. Elise and Dan, who run the Elkhorn Inn, which is an old company clubhouse that's turned into an inn. And then, you know, went underground with miners, very deep underground, you know, 7 miles into it till we hit the face. Went on the top of a mountaintop with Rob Goodwin from the Coal River Mountain Watch. Very wide range. Uh-huh. And, you know, shot every day except for 5 days during that span, whether it was shooting B-roll or spending time with people. So, you know, spent a lot of time in people's living rooms and getting to know them before even picking up the camera.
Yeah, and that's amazing because so many people would say, well, there's nothing there.
I know. Well, yeah, people do say that. And there's the problem is, you know, I think I reached out to just over 200 people to interview, and around 75, 76 agreed. So I interviewed that many people. And then we sort of had to pare it down based on how many people do we have to actually flesh out their story in this. And, you know, the server costs obviously are kind of expensive for this type of project. So it had to be curated, which is sort of problematic because, you know, you have community members that didn't make it into the final piece.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And I totally forgot. I had some question right on my tip of my tongue there. In some of our communities around here that are similar to MacDill County, people are really kind of polarized and having a hard time, you know, dealing with the loss of mining jobs and figuring out if there's a future, and just you know, talking to each other about these kinds of things. And I wondered if you encountered some of that, if you felt like the filmmaking made that worse or brought people together or what.
I think it's polarized as well in McDowell. And I had quite a bit of trouble finding someone that was willing to speak out against mining in McDowell because I did want to offer as many viewpoints as possible. I really didn't want this to be pro or anti anything. You know, I really wanted to put the two opposing viewpoints back to back. I had a hard time, you know, because the people that do work in the coal industry, you know, depend on the coal industry for their livelihood. And, you know, the small businesses, the restaurants depend on the local economy and business to drive people there during lunchtime hours, different things. So it's very embedded in the culture and it is polarized. But you don't see a lot of, you know, it's like you do in some communities, like in Boone County or other counties, you don't see a strong like anti-coal activism group mm-hmm. in McDowell. Yeah.
Well, we should tell us a little bit about Alan, who was really helpful to you. And then we've got a song. He's a songwriter, I understand.
Yeah. Alan's awesome. So Alan, born and raised, if you asked him if he's lived in McDowell County his whole life, he would tell you not yet. he's a hilarious guy. I really can't say enough about him because he's really one of the main reasons I was able to build trust in the community. He's one of the first people I met. And, you know, he took me around everywhere. I went on photography trips with him. He's been documenting the area through photographs for years because he started seeing buildings go down and different things and didn't want to lose those memories. But he's also a very talented bluegrass musician. So is his daughter, Stacey Grubb. And they've performed all over, the Wheeling Jamboree and elsewhere. And so, yeah, we'll play one of his songs. He's very he writes a lot about McDowell County, a lot about Appalachia. So he's a great guy and a great symbol for McDowell, I think.
That's great. And his last name is?
It's Alan Johnston.
Alan Johnston.
Johnston.
Yeah.
You can call him Cathead. That's what he goes by.
So we have a song queued up. Either one?
Let's do, which one did I give you?
Got Sweet Appalachia and Appalachia is My Name.
How about Appalachia is My Name? I like that one.
On God's creation, a place of beauty beyond compare. Some people say it's almost heaven. Look for me, you'll find me there. You can't find me on the highest mountain. You can't find me in the black coal mine. And I can be found in the deep dark holler, in the wind that blows through the lonesome pine. And I make my home in mountain people, my spirit flowing through their veins. My soul will live with them forever. Appalachia is my name. For many years I've roamed these mountains. My life is older than the trees. And you can hear my voice in the mountain music. And you can hear me whisper in a mountain breeze. My story, they think my mountain ways are strange. They're gonna tell the world all about me, but they can't even pronounce my name. And I make my home in my spirit flowing to their veins. My soul lives with them forever. Appalachia is my name. My soul lives with them forever. Appalachia is my name.
Put your arms around me, and then we'll go. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Well, that was Alan Johnston, otherwise known as Cathead. And we're very pleased to play his song. He's written, Elaine says he's written lots of songs about McDowell County and Appalachia, and they're pretty heartfelt. And he's also a photographer.
Yeah, and you can find a lot of his other work, music online, by Googling South 52. That's the name of the band.
All right, South 52, and that is the highway that runs through McDowell County.
Absolutely.
As well. Great. So we're going to talk to Linda McKinney shortly, and maybe her husband Bob might be joining her. And she was another person that you really were impressed with in McDowell County.
Yeah. Well, actually, Linda heard about Hollow before we even came down, and she was one of our Kickstarter backers.
Oh, great.
As well as Alan. And so when I first met her, it was sort of like we had already known each other because we had Facebook messaged a bit and had talked quite a bit, but I really got to know her over the summer, and she sort of became my mom and second mom, and Bob became my second dad and worried about me as I went up strange hollers.
Right.
And but yeah, the video we're going to show or listen to is about her upbringing in McDowell. Uh-huh. And her efforts there at the food bank.
Great. And we are listening, we are talking about The Hollow, the documentary, and you can check out the whole documentary at hollowdocumentary.com. And we have Elaine McMillian, the producer and the director and the camera person and the community organizer, all with us here, all in one person here tonight. So we're going to listen to one of the short films. We're going to hear Linda's story.
They're going to put three eggs. While I'm doing this, my daughter's over here doing this salad. Okay, we're doing it in a bowl that's almost as old as I am. It's one of the things that my aunt always made salad in.
I was born and raised up a hollow called Number 4 Hollow. I was 6 years old when my mother passed away. She was 28 years old. I was raised by my father. We began living with my grandmother, who was my nonna. I'm Italian. She was 80 years old at that time.
What are you making?
Spaghetti pizza, baby doll.
I want
that. I know. Watch me slay the bird.
And there was also a widowed aunt in the home. I was raised by a village of Italian women and my dad. At the age of 6, I was pulled up to a cook stove, and I was taught to cook. I was taught to make bread. I was taught to make sauces. I was taught to do gardening. I was taught everything that I was supposed to grow up and get married and have children and make bread and sauce. My husband worked with U.S. Steel Mining. We've pastored since 1987 in the Methodist Church. We've had the food bank 3 years. We were given totally free of charge. We were handed the keys and a checkbook with $19,000 in it. At that time, the food bank was not in the condition that it's in now. No type of ministry, no type of outreach. When we were given the food bank, we felt that it was a way to reach out to the community. We now have 6 viable pantries in McDowell County. Our numbers have not grown, but the numbers that are in the homes have grown. Household served has remained about the same. We had a large month last month. We served 765 households, but we served 1,873 individuals. I have two households that I serve. One has 12 in the home, and I have the next largest is 8, and then I have one that's 7. Those three homes that I just mentioned, all three of them are grandparents. One of them is a great-grandmother who is 73 years old, who not only raised her grandchildren, but now she's raising her great-grandchildren. When we were given the food bank and we came here to speak with the former director, when I stepped out of the car and I saw all that land and I looked at Bob and I said, there'll be a garden there one day. Only because gardening was so much a part of my life when I was little. I, being a girl raised by my dad, there was so much he taught me about life in the garden. There is something about a garden and a table. That's where relationships are built. So this is the year that we're going to attempt a community garden. The thing that we pride ourselves on here is that there are no salaries, no government funding. Our donations come from faith-based organizations. I always call us the county of white vans because in the summertime we're bombarded with white mission vans coming to help us. Most of the missions, that is their way of surviving. Mission teams come here and they pay them to stay. That doesn't happen here. There are such good people in McDowell County. I mean, I guess that's the reason we've never left. People just want to be part of something. And I really believe that if they see the garden growing and they see the door of the food bank open or they smell, if you notice you came into the building today and you smell, I've always got something usually cooking, I believe that it will enrich their lives. That's our dreams. My dreams.
Are you ready, Toby? We're going to say the prayer. All right. Okay, Bob.
All right. Well, we're back here in the studio with Elaine McMillian, and we're going to also have Linda McKinney on the line. Linda, are you there?
I sure am.
Oh, great. Well, we just watched a short film about you, Linda, and Bob that is part of the Hollow presentation, and it was really great to see what you all are doing there.
Well, thank you.
We've been talking a little bit about the stereotypes of McDowell County and how it's kind of, if people want to compare the down and out to the up and coming, they often use McDowell County. But as the Holler shows, that just doesn't seem to be accurate. So tell us a little bit more about what you all are doing.
Currently, well, as Elaine finished her interview there, when we did the Hollow part, we had just started the community garden. It was beginning then, and we actually had a large, large harvest last year. The tomatoes had taken over. We had a very good crop of tomatoes. This year, we are a little bit late in our planting. We do have plants in our greenhouse. We didn't have that last year, but we're a little bit not on schedule because of all the cold weather that we've had. But right. We do intend to have another large garden as much as we can. This year we are going to be starting some nutritional classes. What we will do is take produce from the garden and be able to cook a healthy meal, a nutritionist meal, and supplement that with the boxes that the people get each month at the food bank. We've partnered with West Virginia State with the garden. They did come down and grant funded that. And also, we have been able to hire a nutritional outreach worker. And that also will be paid by West Virginia State. And that lady will begin April 16th. So we're going to be doing a lot of nutritional outreach this year.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. We're basically concentrating right now on our multi-generational homes because, you know, we have... I don't know if you noticed the percentages of the children that are considered homeless in our county. 47% live without a biological parent in the home.
Wow.
And that's basically grandparents or other relatives or foster care. So we have some grant funding that has come through with the National Federation to End Senior Hunger. That's one of our newest partners this year, and that will be Walmart grant funded. and we'll be doing classes and cooking activities, and we've got three parts of that. We've already had one class. It will be with multi-generational homes, and the students, their children last month got to cook for the grandparents. And George Mason University from Washington came down and taught those classes, and they'll be doing two more classes in April and May. So we want to do a lot of hands-on cooking because cooking's in my blood. That's what I love to do. And I want to do a lot of hands-on cooking with these multi-generational homes.
And the people that weren't watching the video didn't get to see all that very enticing food that you were making.
My famous spaghetti pizza. I'm famous for that around here. I do love to cook, you know, being raised Italian. That's where your memories are made, around the table. And you know, on Sunday at my house, my Nonna would cook and everybody would come. And it would just stay on the table all day, and we ate all day and talked all day. And it makes community. I really believe around the table you build community. And the garden, too. I have a lot of memories as a child in the garden. And that's just in my blood, and that's just what I love to do. And that's how I love people. I feed them.
Well, that's really interesting what you're doing, because there's a lot of effort here in Eastern Kentucky to do similar kinds of programs of encouraging people, helping people to start gardening again, and then talking about the better ways to better foods to eat and better ways to cook them. So I guess it's a bit of a, more than a bit of a problem across our region here. We really lost something for a while.
Right. Well, you know, with some of the things that we get at the food bank, you know, we process anywhere from 26,000 to 36,000 pounds of product a month, and a lot of that product is things that you do have to cook. It's not a lot of microwavable food. I mean, you get a lot of pastas, you get a lot of beans and rice, and some of the new generation do not know what to do with those things. you know, and that's one of the things we want to start doing is be able to, I mean, like last month we got couscous. Well, I just wild trying to find out what to do with couscous. And I actually come up, I mean, you could probably do anything with couscous, I'm finding. I mean, it's just awesome what you can do with
right.
it. So that's one of the things we'll be doing. I mean, it's about 2,000 pounds of it, so it's going to last a couple months. And we want to be using that next month in part of our cooking demonstration and let the children learn what to do with couscous, because I'm thinking that most of them have not heard or eaten couscous, so it's just not something that we get around here.
I can imagine, yeah.
But I've learned quite a bit, you know, doing some recipes online, checking some different things, but that's one of that's a different thing that we get, and that's going to be one of the things we'll be able to use. And beans, we get quite a bit of beans, quite a bit of pasta. So we need to be able to teach this generation to cook, and it was just awesome to see those. They made omelets last, and they ate spinach and kale and things that children usually will not eat. But they prepared it, and the grandparents were able to taste what the children were cooking. It was just really, really exciting.
Oh, that's really nice, and what a nice multi-generational mm-hmm. thing to do together.
Right,
really bring
right.
everyone together. It's a very. I'm sure it's stressful at times to for grandparents to be taking care of kids
and
for the kids as well. So it's really, really a wonderful idea.
Well, it's like I say, when the National Foundation to End Senior Hunger found us, they visited us probably about three times. They were in the process of applying for this Walmart grant. And when Walmart met with them, then they approved this grant. And it's going to be quite a large amount of money that we're going to be able to spend, you know, directly to feeding individuals. And then at the end of the class, all the grandparents took on some, I mean, it was just great food. It was a large bag of nice, fresh food and some meals that were provided, and they were able to take that home and try the recipes with what the children had done there. So it's a continuation. And then next month it will be a different thing that they will cook, I mean, for the grandparents, and then they'll take some more food home and they'll try some new recipes. And hopefully, you know, we'll be able to do something to that effect each month at least.
Right. And how are people reacting to the community garden and the nutrition classes? What's the general response?
Well, the community garden was a new thing to people here because it's raised bed gardening. And I was not myself. I mean, I'm an old-timer garden. You dig a hole in the ground, you put it in the ground, you water it, you know, you feed it. A raised bed gardening, you know, is done in the raised beds up off the ground. Well, people were skeptical. You know, people would come to the food bank, and they said they looked like coffins laying out there. What are you going to do with that box? And basically, people thought you start your plant in the box and take it out and dig a hole and put it in the ground. But once they saw the tomatoes and the cucumbers coming up, it was just, I mean, it was like drive-by. They were afraid of it at first, and then they would drive through and take pictures. And then the one thing that we absolutely love is we tried hydroponic gardening in the water towers. We have one water tower, and, you know, that's totally by water. And that was amazing to us. I would love to have the hydroponic towers all the way across the porch of the food bank, you know, to be able to teach people and show people how quickly the food grows in these water towers. Very little maintenance, very little cleaning of the food when you cut it off. I mean, the celery was delicious. We had lettuce. We had strawberries in it. I love the tower gardening. Mm-hmm. And it can be used as an educational tool for the community, too, yeah. If we could get more of them.
Yeah. Well, that sounds, y'all are really innovative there.
Well, you just tell me what you want, we try anything. That's how you learn. I'm old, but I'm adventurous. I like new things.
Yeah. So what was your reaction when you met Elaine and heard about the HALA project?
Well, like Elaine had told you, we had met, you know, before the online. We uh-huh. talked a little bit and back and forth with emails and things. And the day she showed up at the food bank door and she rang the bell there, and I went and I said, "Oh my Lord, this little girl's come up to McDowell County all by herself." And like she said, my husband and I, because we have a daughter her age, and we wouldn't want our daughter running up and down these hollows. But we couldn't do anything with her. She just went wild over here. So. And we fed her. We fed her a lot that year. And we, you know, she came to our home. She and I both are avid coffee drinkers. So we would sit at the table and talk. And she just became one of ours. She's just like one of our children. And then it was hard to see her go. It really hurt us when she left. But we understand. And then she ran off and got married on us. And that hurt us. But we're happy for her.
Well, she seems to be pretty connected to McDowell County one way or another.
Everywhere she went, I mean, everyone loved her. Everyone.
That's great. Yeah. So this film and the online multimedia presentation has been, I gather, has been shown all around this country and also all around the world. And have you felt that impact? Have you heard from people, or do you think it's making a difference in your work?
Yes, it is. It's making a difference. I mean, you know, the fact that people are finding out about us and we've actually, you know, had some people come in to see what a food bank is, you know, and how we can do what we do. You know, like in the beginning of the documentary, you know, we have no type of grant funding, and we have there's no salaries there. So everything done at the food bank is done by volunteers, including myself, and how we can do what we do. And we've had people call, you know, and wanting to get in touch with Elaine and talk about, or, you know, talk with her, and we've made those connections. We've had some mission teams that have heard about us come in for day missions or brought us clothing. We have a year-round clothing pantry. We have a year-round toy pantry for displaced children, those that are taken from the homes and leave without anything. You know, one of the things they have to leave their toys or their blankets, their animals, or things of that sort. So we do have a year-round toy pantry. We've had a huge donation to that, especially around Christmas. We got a lot of new things for that. The clothing and the toy pantry for the children. We have school supply pantry. We've had a donation for that. You know, people will have things, and they will call and, you know, say, "We saw you on the HALA project," or "We saw you online," or "Explain all this to me," or "What is a food bank?" We do have people that call that don't know what a food bank is.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, and, you know, we try to talk with everyone, and we're always positive, and the documentary was just so positive. I mean, everything she filmed and everyone she talked to was just positive.
And it seems like it somewhat goes against the stereotype or what people often, particularly from outside the area, think of as our region as, you know, just being very poor and depressed and fatalistic and people, you know, not taking care of themselves at all. And it seems like what you all are doing is just the opposite of that.
Well, you know, Elaine's a very positive young lady, and I do not agree with any type of negativism, and she knows that, and she and I talked about that. And that's the one thing, because we're very leery here when people show up, you know, and want to stick a camera up or tell you, you know, let's talk about this and I'll film you. Elaine, you know, she guaranteed us that it would all be positive, and that we would review it, you know, look at it and take out what we wanted to, or, you know, just to be ourselves. And after you're around her for a while, you just learn that you can be yourself, and I trusted her wholly. And she hasn't let me down, so and she hasn't let the county down. She didn't film us and then, you know, go out and portray us as poor people. And, you know, she let us tell our stories. You know, I've lived here all my life. I was born here. And this county's been good to me and my husband, and we've raised three good children here, have a nice home, and been able to provide, and it's been good to us. You know, there's negative anywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
But this is our home, and we love it here.
And it certainly seems like you and your husband are really giving back to the community now.
Well, you know, the community has been good to us, and we just give as it is given to us. And that's the only way we know how to live. We try, you know, we give what we're getting. We just feel that if it's given to us, then we have to give it out. And what better place to give it is in our home, you know. And we know most everyone here. You know, both of us were born and raised here. And we have just a wonderful community. In my eyes, you know, I don't see it for what it may look like today. You know, growing up, everything changes with age. And we are this, you know, we are McDowell County, and we are the ones that make it. If we live here, this is our county.
What do you see? What do you kind of hope for the future of McDowell County? What do you think's going to happen?
I really don't know what's going to happen. You know, I would just only hope that the people that are here and the younger generation would just learn from the previous generation. You know, that's what we want to do with our classes and bringing in the multi-generational homes. If when grandma or grandpa or aunt or uncle passes away, the knowledge in their head, the knowledge that we have, you know, with our hands, the work that we do, it has to be passed on to the next generation in order for them to continue, to have McDowell continue. I mean, it's easy to run away.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy. I mean, when our daughter graduated Concord in 2009, I begged her not to come back here.
Huh.
But she came back here, and she's got an awesome job, an awesome husband, and expecting our first grandchild.
Wow.
So... You know, our county is what we make it.
Linda, if you don't mind if I jump in there.
Go ahead.
Why did you discourage Jenna from coming back?
I guess I discouraged her because I didn't think she could use the degree. You know, she had worked so hard to go to college and worked so hard in college to maintain. I really did not want her to come back here because I was just so afraid that she couldn't use her degree. But when she did come back here, she's got an awesome job. She's a banking assistant in the trust department, and she's working on her banking degree now. So, you know, she went right to work when she came home, and she helps us with the food bank. She and her husband every weekend are with us. I really had a fear of her not being able to use the degree that she'd worked so hard to get. But she proved me wrong, and that's okay. she's happy here, and her husband has an awesome job, and... both of my sons are moved to Mercer County, but they're within, you know, an hour's distance from us. They both have good jobs, and but I did not want her to come back here, and, you know. But she proved me wrong, and we're all happy about it.
Well, I know that's a big discussion topic around all through the mountains is our young people, and I think all parents want them to get a good education, but we hate to lose them to the big city as well.
Right, right.
And I think what you were saying about the multi-generations and learning from each other is really critical.
It is very critical. You know, I want to, you know, we're expecting, like I say, a grandchild, and it's a little girl, and the first thing I'll do is when she can stand up, she's going to come up to the stove and she's going to learn to cook. And but, you know, just like Jenna did, I tell you, know, and I have things that I want to teach my granddaughter that, you know, possibly I didn't even think of when I was raising Jenna. And, you know, we have so much knowledge as in the older generation, you know. I was taught so much by my grandmother and my dad in the garden and around the stove. That was just family. And that's where relationships are built.
Tell me just a little bit more about the community garden. Does anybody in the community that wants to come and work in that or have a plot, or how does it work?
Well, everything is there. And, you know, we did have several from the community that would come up. We work a lot of the evenings because my husband is a safety instructor for the State Mine Department. So he has a job that actually pays the bills. So we work a lot of the evening, and we work, you will see us most weekends around the clock there, especially Saturday evenings. People will come, and we will go to the garden, and a lot of people try to give me their opinions and what I should do. And actually, people do teach me things, you know, different ways of killing bugs, or this certain bug gets in your garden, or this certain animal. You know, we had some deer that came down and helped themselves last year, and we're right on the highway, and I didn't have to worry about the deer. 2 or 3 days later, a car got it. But people will come if we sit out on the porch. Or, you know, we have a large porch area, and we have tables there, and we always have a pot of coffee going, and people come in the evening, and we'll walk the garden, and we'll talk, and it's brought a lot of people, and I think it will bring people more this year because we were a little late getting it started. And this year will be, you know, the garden. They know the garden is there, and they know what's going to happen there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like in many of our communities, we've not only have we lost the art of gardening, but we don't sit on the front porch anymore and talk with the neighbors. So you're really taking us back.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I had a porch when I was little, and that's one thing about food. It's a long porch of the food. It's like we call it the Cracker Barrel of the county. You know how Cracker Barrel goes all the way from. That's what we have. We just needed some rocking chairs, and we. But yeah, a lot of people. Sunday evenings, Sunday afternoons after church, we go up quite a bit. Doors are open, and you know, the lights are on, and people come up, especially in the summer. We were out in the garden working, and a lot of people give us a lot of ideas, and then we tell, you know, we have the opportunity to tell people about the raised beds and in the hydroponic tower. I'm hoping that this year, you know, people are anxious to get out of their houses because we've been snowed in or iced in for so long. And I'm hoping this year we'll have even a larger amount of the community to come by.
Well, that's great. So tell us the name of the food bank again, and if and maybe some contact information. I don't know if you would like to hear from people if they might want to help in any way.
Well, it's 5 Loaves and 2 Fishes Food Bank, and we are located in Kimball, West Virginia. Our mailing address is 171 Riverside Drive, Welch, 24801. I can be contacted by the food bank at the food bank number at 304-585-7295. Or I have a cell that people call me on my cell. It's 304-888-1160. And we'll be happy, anyone that, you know, we have people that just want to come in on a weekend and work at the food bank, or either come in and bring supplies or whatever we might need. You know, anyone is, you're more than welcome to call, and we'll discuss anything that you might want to have any ideas about or any activities. We do have people that come in and want to do activities for the community. We're available for that. So, because we have we have 68,000 square feet, and 12,000 of that is under roof in a large warehouse area. We have a commercial kitchen approved by the state, so we're able to do any type of cooking activity, any kind of foods, or anything we might need to do.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, there's lots of people talking about these kinds of things. I know here in Letcher County and other places, so we may have to get up carload and come over and see how you're doing it.
Just let me know, and you'll have spaghetti pizza that day.
That sounds great. Well, I think we have a song queued up from Alan Johnston,
okay,
otherwise known as Cathead, I gather. So
I went to school with Alan, actually. He's a couple years older now.
Uh-huh.
We were both raised right up around the same holler and rode the same bus.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We'll stay in touch.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks,
you're
Linda.
Welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was Linda McKinney at the 5 loaves and two fishes food bank, and she shared her information. Sounds like she's got an awful lot, that they're doing amazing things and really could, she's willing to share what she knows and what she's doing too.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing is manpower on the ground, you know, because her and Bob do so much themselves. So, you know, setting supplies is one thing, but wanting to go on the ground and help is another thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've been here today with Elaine McMillian, and it's been really terrific to have her here and talk about her award-winning multimedia production about McDowell County, West Virginia, which is probably no more, I would say, than about 80 miles away as the crow would fly, straight over the hills and the Tug River over there. And it's just been a treat to have you here. And folks should go to hollowdocumentary.com and really download patiently and look at the whole site.
Yeah, and you need, actually, you need Google Chrome, which is a specific browser to watch it, or Safari. Or if you're interested in seeing a DVD version, you can just email me at hollowdocumentary@gmail.com.
All right.
Or I'm sorry, hollowinteractive@gmail.com. Don't want it to go the wrong place. And yeah, we're selling DVDs for $10 or $15.
So. Oh, that's a very fair price for sure. Well, thank you for,
thanks for having me.
Really letting the people of McDowell County tell their stories, their many stories.
I'm glad they were willing. Glad they trusted me.
Yeah, well, you did a good job.
Thank you.
So we're going to play Alan's song.
Look at me, Appalachia. Mountaintop strives to provide an opportunity for everyone in our diverse audience to speak out about issues of importance to us all. We welcome your calls and suggestions for upcoming shows. To discuss a topic for a future Mountain Talk or to be a guest host yourself, please contact WMMT. Phone 606-633-0108, or you can write us at 91 Madison Avenue, Whitesburg, Kentucky, 41858, or email us at wmmtfm@appleshop.org. And Apple Shop is spelled APPALSHOP. Thank you.